You've reached the Yahoo Fantasy Football Podcast. This is Matt.
And Liz.
Today we talk about the fantasy playoffs. Those have started, but the NFL playoff race is far from over.
So we talk about some jokers like the Browns, the Panthers, and the Jaguars that are affecting your fantasy playoffs.
We also lament the broken Patriots offense and the two-faced Houston Texans.
Two-faced. And we run through a bunch of big injuries to take note of from all of the Week 14 action.
Bring your tears, bring your dreams, and your hopes, and listen away.
Bye.
Hello and welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Podcast. Usually, when you hear me introing the podcast, it means that I am without Liz Loza, but that's not the case. We flipped the script here. I've got Liz right next to me. Liz,
yes,
what's
ma'am?
Up? It seems there's something wrong with your voice. Something, well, I don't want to say wrong. That sounds judgy. It seems your voice is a little less
different.
Than 100%.
Would you say that my voice is a little bit different?
A little different, yeah.
What's yeah, I've up? Been working all day. You know what? It's week 14. If you have a championship fantasy team, you're on a bye. So I'm just going to say what happens on a bye stays on a bye.
Oh, all right. How mysterious. I like that you've leaned into this. This is very good. Good content. Also joining us, obviously, are Brett, Raghu, our wonderful producers. Brett, do you have any fantasy playoff teams alive?
No, sir.
All right.
Not in the Yahoo Fantasy Football Podcast Listener League, nor my other keeper league. I'm solid like 10th or 11th place in both.
Well, that's gorgeous. Way to rep us, buddy. I am in the playoffs of our Fantasy Football Podcast Listener League, hoping for a big Tyler Higbee game tonight so that I don't have to drink myself to sleep tonight for not playing Jared Cook. But anyways, we forge on with the podcast with me in the driver's seat. Liz, let's talk about tomorrow's headlines today, which, of course, I think a crucial point here.
It's just like a mad soliloquy.
I think a crucial point here.
Tell us about the crucial points.
I think a crucial
By
point.
By the way, I just turned into Marge Simpson's sister. Like, what happened? I think I went from like Kathleen Turner to like, tell us about the crucial points.
I've had to get a lot of curveballs here with the voice today. It's been quite a journey, a fun one though. All day working
course,
with you,
yes.
Always. Now, I think we should talk about teams that are eliminated or close to eliminated from actual NFL playoff contention, because I think there's two way teams can go in these scenarios. They can either be totally packing it in, or they can start to be a little frisky. And I think we saw a little bit of both from a lot of different teams today. But I want to talk about the teams that today looked like they were kind of packing it in. These teams that are on the fringes, they're not going anywhere most likely. But the three I have down here are the Browns, the Panthers, and the Jags. Now, a little bit varying results here. The Browns, obviously, are the interesting one because they won. However, still kind of like a total nightmare performance all the way around for this team. I'm so ready for the 2019 Browns to like get the hell out of our lives. Liz, what do we do with this team going forward?
Well, I think what's interesting about this team is that we know and have seen what works for them. And that's obviously running the ball, mm-hmm. right? And making things, you've made this point, I've thought quite well, making things simple for Baker Mayfield. And when you're facing a team like the Bengals, it would seem that using Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt should be a foregone conclusion. Yet I think there is still some reluctance to packing it in, or maybe some desire via the ego or the id to salvage this season for the tabloid's sake. And so you've got these reports about OBJ telling his agents to come invite suitors, and maybe he's been injured, and you hear Baker Mayfield apologizing for not wanting to throw the medical staff under the bus, and there's obviously a lot going on, and a lack of discipline has been since week one the issue. This is nothing new, right? But I do think there's like a bit of a hero complex going on here. Like, maybe if they don't just win out, but they win in splashy ways, they will salvage the narrative, and that I think is problematic. For real life football, for fantasy football, though, I think it continues to keep your bigger play guys like OBJ, who if this is true that his agent is shopping, is going to take as many showcase moments as possible. So I think it keeps him and Landry in play. Also, Njoku's coming back. He's got the Cardinals next week. He did not do particularly well this week, but he shook off some rust, and the matchup against the Cardinals, especially if you were a Jared Cook owner and he is in concussion protocol, is quite nice heading into week 15.
Yeah, I think the Beckham part is worrisome to me because you come off of this game where he had a good matchup and still did essentially nothing. Under 50 yards receiving for, like, what, the 100th straight game so far this season. It just hasn't been there. Jarvis Landry had a modest game today. He's actually been kind of cooking over the last couple of months. I think Baker Mayfield suffering a hand injury last week, you know, it kind of would have been nice to see him take a week off. Like, you know, your season's over at this
point. That's what I mean. The ego is going to continue to drive this bus.
And I just think, too, like, it has overall seemed like that the team consistently tries to be flashier than it needs to be. I think that's a really good point by you because even in this game, it seemed like they were never really running the ball enough. They open up in the second half with a 6-play, 75-yard drive fueled by a big play from Nick Chubb. But he has just, I think, 15 carries in this game. And overall, just it's just not enough. It doesn't seem like they have any identity. And it's just – it's again. I think, again, it's going to be really problematic having to – consistently deal with this team and like start sit decisions and all that when they're just
you've got Arizona and you're starting all those guys against Arizona and then you've got Baltimore and you're not
but are you starting like the Beckham thing I think is hard because I've been willing to say all year like go with Beckham like don't
if you're in
faith.
The playoffs you have man and you're a Beckham owner you have managed it well and you're not going to not flex him at Arizona. Yeah. You are, however, maybe going to sit him in week 16 against the Baltimore secondary.
I'm as a Beckham fantasy,
apologist.
Well, apologist, and he's on my team that's in the damn fantasy playoffs that might survive this week. I'm sitting here thinking about it right now, and like I'm going to be weighing him against some other people, and I don't think it's out of the question if he really is hurt, and I think that if he is hurt, that helps explain why he's been so seemingly unexplosive for most of this season. I know it's a convenient excuse, but it also does make sense to me that Baker comes out and like, well, it doesn't make sense for him to do this, but you know, he rails the medical staff or whatever. I think it just kind of lends more credibility to the fact that like, hey, maybe he really is hurt. But we will see.
The only thing about the injury issue that seems precarious to me, not just the timing, but the fact that on the same day those reports are being leaked.
Yeah.
The other reports, I think via Bleacher Report, that his agents were accepting offers that he didn't want to stay in Cleveland. Like, there may not be all the truth to it, but there's definitely a kernel. And it seems weird that both of those things would come out at the same time.
It definitely seems weird. Something about him all year has seemed weird in Cleveland, which is sad because it's not quite at all what we expected. Now, there's two other teams I mentioned on the packing it in spectrum.
Oh, yeah.
The Panthers and the Jags. Like,
yeah, boys.
Let's be clear.
Feels good to be you in this podcast. Yeah, boys, let's do them all.
You're the like Jags fan coming out of like September. You were
all talking about the Jags. We're talking about Carolina.
Panthers and Jags.
Right,
two
but
teams,
right now we're on
teams,
Carolina.
Two teams at once.
Don't make me lose my. I'll tell you what. We're talking about the Panthers right now. We'll get to the Jags in a minute.
The Panthers, though, it's like nothing changes after the Rivera exit, which I guess isn't surprising, but
we were watching the game together and watched Darrell Williams literally look behind him as his quarterback was getting sacked, and that ferocious Falcons D just woo, let him up.
I actually kind of want to find the tweet right now, but it's like same old for the Carolina Panthers. Like, their quarterback is bad. Their running game is all they have. Their defense is a total and utter train wreck.
But for fantasy, do we mind that? Do we mind that, like, listen, Christian McCaffrey, there was talk during FFL this morning about whether or not he'd bounce back. Like, are we going to be subjected to this recency bias, especially during weeks in which the fantasy stakes are so high? He didn't find the end zone, but sure, he's clearing over 100 yards total. I will take that. I'm not going to not, you know, that's fantastic. 12 targets, 11 catches. Sure. Your boy Ian Thomas, who was playing in the stead of Greg Olsen, showed out well. He found the end zone.
Yeah.
Listen, 5 for 57 is tight end one material anyway. Mm-hmm. Finding the end zone makes him like a top five play.
Yeah, it's like totally juicy. The stat that I wanted to find here was from Bill Voth, who works in the Panthers media department. Falcons interceptions this season, 6 versus Carolina, 4 versus everyone else. Oof. Falcons sacks this season, 9 versus Carolina, 13 versus everyone else. So the Panthers have been a lot of teams get right games so far. And it's worth noting, too, if you're expecting to see any of Will Greer, interim head coach Perry Fuel said after the game that he is not going to make a quarterback change because, quote, Kyle Allen gives him the best chance to win, which just further proves
how unready Will Greer is.
Yeah, and it just, to me, further shows, man, if the Panthers really do trade Cam Newton, as Ian Rapoport reported, that if they get a massive haul, like, that better be massive, because they are headed straight to no plan at all if they trade Cam Newton this offseason.
Let's focus back on the last 2 weeks of the season versus Minnesota in week 15 and then at home versus Oakland. Now, Curtis Samuel is someone that has triggered you because people are like, oh, why isn't he putting up these gaudy numbers that you promised? And you have barked back and, you know, I understand why, saying that, well, his quarterback sucks. Like, if his quarterback can't effectively get him the ball, he can't be the big play threat that we
especially
need him
down
to
the
be.
Field. Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
But in matchups against both those secondaries that are beatable, are you still leaning towards his upside as a flex when DJ Moore, I think, is going to be more of a low-end wide receiver too, again, versus Minnesota and Oakland?
See, I mean, Moore has been able to produce regardless. Like, he's been
81 yards today.
Yeah, he's been pretty unbelievable, at least from a floor perspective. And he showed a little bit of ceiling love in a few games too, because the way he runs routes, where he runs routes and faces a bunch of zone coverage because of the routes that he does run, that works favorably for what Kyle Allen does. Now, you're just, it's the same old thing. Like, I think that actually you make a decent point, which, like, if Kyle Allen remains under center, it just doesn't really change the equation here.
That's
which,
right.
Yeah. So I think that you're approaching these two the way that you always have been, even if the team looks like it's packing it in. I think you're just more incentivized than ever, I think, to continue to throw out offensive players against Carolina. Like, it didn't work because Calvin Ridley got hurt today. I mean, he was all right before he left, but he got hurt. Julio Jones obviously was a little absent, but some dude that I've never heard of scored a 90 plus yard touchdown on Carolina. Cornerback Dante Jackson is throwing the coaching staff under the bus afterwards. It's a mess.
We can now go to the Jags if you'd like.
Now, I just think with the Jaguars, like, any hope that Minshew was like going to come back and going to, like, revitalize this team or bring some life back into it, which I didn't think was totally out of the realm of possibility, I think is probably dead in the water, because I think the rest of the team, like, has already booking travel plans for the offseason. That's the way they played today against a very not-so-good L.A. Chargers team.
I think this is a lot to do with Coughlin.
Yeah.
And I think it has a lot to do, it stems, a lot comes from the Jalen Ramsey trade, because clearly the players were pro Ramsey.
Yeah.
And this was a debate who was going to win, Coughlin or Ramsey. And the players, I think, will mostly side with the players instead of the owners. And now there is a lack of wanting to. There's reports, obviously, that came out 2 weeks ago that Doug Marrone was on the hot seat. Right. And I don't think these players necessarily want to play for this squad, and they know they're out of it. I am surprised, though, that Gardner Minshew can't rally the troops in a more effective way. And over the next 2 weeks, again, at Oakland, at Atlanta, these are good matchups. So while I may not be starting Gardner Minshew because he's proven to be inconsistent and maybe the rest of these ancillary pieces are just too far gone that he can't lift it by himself, I'm still starting Leonard Fournette. Yeah. And I don't care about his YPC. Don't at me. It's a volume question. And I'm still starting DJ Chark, who had 9 of 10 for 75 today. Everybody else, like, you know, you said it heading into FFL. DD Westbrook, I'm not doing it. Chris Conley, like, I'm sorry. I tried it out. We didn't work. It's fine. You know, his hands aren't that great. We learned a lesson. But I think you're going to proceed. And you're feeling pretty good about DJ Chark, even if you're not feeling good about the rest of this ecosystem, because he's proven to be such a bright spot and because the matchups are so solid.
Yeah, it did get banged up for a bit in this game, so keep your eye on that. Make sure he's not long-term hurt. But yeah, I agree completely with your analysis there on those teams. Now, let's flip it, be a little positive here. The teams that were frisky to me today, despite being out of playoff contention, the Broncos, the Falcons, the Colts, and the Bucks. Let's start with Brett's Broncos, where Drew Locke recorded a total QBR. This comes from Seth Walder at ESPN. Recorded a QBR of 98.7 today. That is the highest QBR game this season by a quarterback not named Lamar Jackson.
Solid.
Like,
I mean, what do you want me to say? He was only sacked once. He turned the ball over just once, and he's doing it with this awful offensive line and with a rookie tight end who spooks the minute a defender comes within like a yard of him. Cortland Sutton's a monster, but also like Philip Lindsay is continued. I don't care about him being small and living in his mom's damn basement. Like, this is a rag.
Hey, he moved out. All right, he moved out.
Fine,
folks.
Fair.
He's finally moved out.
This is a ragtag group who nobody believed in, and I'm here for it. The scariest part about it, though, is that John Elway might be able to say, "I told you so," and then football Twitter is going to explode.
You know, you're not wrong about that, but I think he's got one here.
He like, sure with- does. Don't like, make me lose my voice again.
Look, I mean, I'm glad. Look, I'm glad you're excited because it's good. Because
oh, it's so fun to watch a quarterback give a. He is aggressive. He cares. Yes, he is going to write checks that his body can't catch or his arm can't catch or really.
Cash,
his,
yeah.
I mean, I don't even think it's his arm. It's his processing speed.
Yeah, because he's got a great arm.
He has a great arm. It's his. The issue is that he never pulls back. He always, what was the knock against him was he's always playing hero. Mm-hmm. You know what? Those Broncos, they need a hero. Roll up the 80s soundtrack. They need a hero.
It was unbelievable.
Drew Lock.
And look.
You got what else you got to say?
I just think that he's been a great point that, like, there's a lot of talent on this Broncos offense just in terms of, like, Fant, I think, can play. Even we talk about when he's like, – today, it's worth noting, one of his big catches.
After the catch.
But the initial point of the catch, there was a guy pretty close to him. So,
and he did not, like, do that little –
yeah,
that little like prancer
his
step.
Little tutter, yeah,
little
his
reindeer
little
hooves.
Pissant steps.
I did not say pissant.
I said what I said.
I said reindeers.
Anyways.
Thematic.
So that was good to see from them.
I have a question for you.
Yo, go for it.
Who is the starter in 2020? Drew Lock or Derek Carr of their current teams?
Both.
Yeah, you think so?
I think both. This is great for Drew Lock because, I mean, it's great for the Broncos because then they don't have to go and, like, draft Justin Herbert in the first round of this year's draft.
It's great for the Senior Bowl because, my God, what a funnel of talent.
Well, just don't ask Dave Gettleman about Daniel Jones. Let's talk about the Falcons, who we mentioned earlier. The Falcons are getting healthy, which is, well, sure. I said they were getting healthy coming into this game. Then Calvin Ridley gets hurt. It's a
the one person that was not hurt.
Yeah, right. But it looks like they're still... you could say it looks like they're still playing. I think that they have plenty of incentive, like, to show something to the next coaching staff. But you could also say, hey, they were playing the Carolina Panthers today, and they're just real bad.
I don't know if I've said this before, and I believe it was Charles Robinson or Therese Paylor who had the theory that after the trade deadline, this defense started to play because they were no longer worried about getting traded. And so the anxiety was off of their game and they started to play up. Now, they haven't been as consistent as they were against New Orleans in that game out of the bye. But they did it today. I mean, we were joking about that vaunted Falcons pass rush taking out Kyle Allen numerous times. Like, I wonder what they're playing up for, though.
Yeah. I mean, the tough thing is, like, regardless of what.
Like, are they playing up to fight for Dan Quinn or are they showcasing for next year? I don't know.
I think it's more of a showcase situation.
Why?
To be fair, I think the players probably like Dan Quinn, but I still think Dan Quinn is not coming back.
It doesn't really matter because next week they're at
49ers,
San Francisco.
Yeah.
Right. So they're traveling. Also, Richard Sherman, the vaunted cornerback in San Francisco, pulled up lame at the end of this game. In week 14, it looked like a hamstring injury to me. I have not read a report because I've been too busy working, but I would keep an eye on that because obviously if he were to be out, it would be a nice upgrade for Julio Jones. Week 15, you don't want to mess around.
No doubt. Next team, want to talk about the Colts. We'll talk about the Colts and Bucks because they were in the same game, went into a total shootout there. The Bucks inevitably come out on top, but the Colts, I thought this was an encouraging performance. Now, with the obvious caveat that it comes against the Tampa Bay secondary, which we all know is a heaping pile of garbage. Jacoby Brissett had his best game in quite some time. Now, you know, wasn't super efficient, 53% completion rate, but 2 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, 93 passer rating. It was better, like I said, than what we've seen recently. Marlon Mack coming back was all right, 2.9 yards per carry, but he did find the end zone if you start him in fantasy. But I thought it was cool to see some of these ancillary passing pieces pop up for decent works, decent games like Zach Pascal.
We got
Marcus
that
Johnson.
One right.
Yeah.
We got that one right. Jack Doyle, 6 targets, but didn't really do much in terms of production, only two catches. A Marcus Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
The Marcus Johnson went for over 100 and a tutty.
Yep. The Marcus Johnson. Yeah. I think the difference between a team like the Colts, this is a little bit like out there and narrative-y, but like I think the difference between a team like the Colts and a team like the Panthers or the Browns or the Jaguars is that the Colts, I still believe in the culture that Frank Reich has built.
Absolutely.
And everything that's going on with that team, I still...
They do too.
And they buy into it. And like they're still always coming back from, you know, like not getting off to a head start with Andrew Luck retiring. You can't, that it's great that they've been as impressive as they have been without it, but it still is something that you have to say. I think every time you talk about the Indianapolis Colts, that they came in so different than what they expected. And they've shown really well despite that. Whereas teams like the Panthers that have no culture at this point, because you can't, as great as it is to have the owner come out and like be very transparent, be like, I don't want to do this behind Ron Rivera's back. You're still telling the players, hey, this over. Like, right. We're on to 2020.
It sounds like you're tapping into resiliency, and that's the narrative, which is interesting in this matchup that you've chosen that, because it was in after the game that Bruce Arians said that the resiliency of this Bucs squad was growing on him. And I was like, oh, is that what we're saying now? Like, that's how, quote, optimistic we are, is that by week 14, the resiliency, that means they suck.
Yeah, they're not
that
good.
That means like, hey, I got three more weeks of shit left, and mm-hmm. then I don't know if I'm coming back again.
Well, I think he's coming back. I think. But
it's worth mentioning that Mike Evans got hurt in this one.
Yeah, and to quote Bruce Arians again, he said it's not, he doesn't know the full extent of it, but it's definitely not good. We're going to talk injuries in a little bit. Jameis Winston, by the way, had the most Jameis Winston stat line, I think, of all time. 456 passing yards, 10 yards per attempt, 4 passing touchdowns, 3 interceptions. Like, this is the live by the Winston, die by the Winston type of game. They come out of it this one with a win, but you know,
a 3-point win.
I think the Bucs are pretty much just going to be exactly what we expect them to be the rest of the way. Obviously, with Evans being a bit of a precarious situation. Now, I think it, Chris Godwin still got his 9 targets, 7 for 91. Evans, luckily, if you played him in fantasy, he had a 61-yard touchdown before he left. But O.J. Howard and Breshad Perriman both popped up for pretty decent games.
Cameron Brate found the end zone, but...
But O.J. Howard did have 4 for 73, which is not disgusting from the tight end position. And Breshad Perriman, 3 for 70 and a touchdown. I don't think there's a universe where I'm brave enough to play Breshad Perriman.
Maybe not in redraft, but knowing that the Bucs will travel to Detroit
right
in week 15, and assuming that Breshad Perriman is going to be about, $14 in Yahoo DFS.
I think that might be generous.
I mean, we'll maybe see. 12 to 13. If Mike Evans is hurt, I don't hate it.
It's not the worst ceiling play that will probably be on the board.
No. Nope. Also, Ronald Jones, you guys, stop.
Yeah,
11-11 for Peyton Barber and 11 for Ronald Jones. It is a split. We're not doing this. I'm not answering any more questions about
it. Dead even on yardage, almost 36 to 34 in favor of your boy Ronald Jones. Let's talk about the New England Patriots dynasty. Brett is willing to RIP this thing. I kind of want to go a little bit of back and forth on this game, because number one, I could rant about dumb analysis about the Patriots, but I think we can spare that. I do want to talk about the Chiefs side a little bit, because Patrick Mahomes, like, it feels like he's been banged up forever.
Yep.
He's banged up. He's getting an X-ray done on his hand.
Saw him holding his hand during the game.
Yep, that was consistent. They're just a tick off on offense. And, like, frankly, if the Patriots had any juice on offense at all, I think they could have come back and won this game, because the Chiefs kept handing them opportunities to do so.
I mean, you could say, I appreciate that you, I think you're right, that the Patriots offense couldn't fight back. But if the Chiefs offense is a tick off, then where is this vaunted Patriots defense?
Oh, I mean, I think it's 2019 and offense beats defense, you know, 9 times out of 10.
1 sack for Patrick Mahomes. 1 turnover. I mean, they held him to 1 passing score, but
I mean, you're living on the thinnest of margins for error when you're consistently asking your defense to you know, to create turnovers, to score touchdowns, and for that to be how you
position
win the game.
Time of possession.
I mean, it was very telling to me when Bill Belichick didn't send anyone back to return the punt and instead sent everyone to block a punt in the fourth quarter of this football game, because that's just the ultimate, like, I think we can make plays on special teams. I do not think we can drive the field on offense. And he's right. They can't really drive the field on offense because they suck. And it's okay, like, to say that. It's okay to say that the Patriots offense sucks and that they're not the same Patriots that we know. They're not the same dominant team at all. It doesn't mean that they're done. It doesn't mean that the dynasty is over. It doesn't mean that they can't get hot and eventually win the Super Bowl this year, because those are all things that are possible. But this offense sucks right now, and it's a huge problem in the AFC.
It's going to take some retooling. Let's reframe this for fantasy purposes a little bit, though. I want to talk about the Kansas City backfield. LeSean McCoy. So we had both of the D. Williamses out this week. There was a moment of hope for Matt Harmon. I almost said Matt Thompson, for co-creator of Archer, by the way. Shout out to Matt Thompson. There was a moment of hope for Matt Harmon that Darwin Thompson, his face-melting boy, would do a little something. That wasn't the case. So LeSean McCoy had 11 carries. That's probably what you're going to get from LeSean McCoy, about 9 to 12, 9 to 11. And then
9 to 11 meaningless carries.
He did have three targets, but he only caught one ball. Spencer Ware was brought back to Kansas City here, and there's obviously a nice narrative that sets up that there's familiarity and all of that works. And Darwin Thompson is a smaller sized back, right? So what can he do? You know, we are going to head into next week with questions about this backfield. It's a little easier to answer if the D. Williamses continued to be hurt. If you had to land on one, which of these, and you don't get to say, like, I'm not playing any of them. Like, if you had to choose one running back in Kansas City's backfield, who would you put your chips on?
I still think it's Thompson, because I think his ceiling is the greatest. I don't think, I mean, Ware comes back and has five carries. He catches one pass for negative yardage. Yeah, I'm going to bet on Thompson, just because I think he's shown a decent bit of explosion. And I think in better matchups that you would see that more.
I just wish, I mean, he did have five targets today. Denver is the opponent in week 15. I think I would probably still lean towards Shady.
Yeah, that's
his legs fair. Have been just kept fairly fresh. So
there's just like nothing to get excited about there.
Nothing at all. New England, I just want to mention that N'Keal Harry did score, frankly, and it didn't count because there were no more challenges left or available to New England. So, again, if that's someone that's been on your roster as a touchdown upside guy and you don't need to make any moves, I think I'd continue to leave him there, because week after week he's going to get more reps. It was Jacoby Myers, the other rookie, who officially, right? Oh, he got his called back too?
Yeah. No, he dropped it.
Oh, he dropped it. Oh, okay.
Yeah, these guys are dust.
Never mind.
But they will be playing in Cincinnati next week.
I also would prefer to keep Harry ahead of Myers.
I agree, because if anyone has a ceiling, I think it's Harry.
And if anyone is trying to be the Gronk replacement, it is not effective. But if that is the goal for any of these players, it is for Harry.
God bless him, he's trying. The Texans do their thing, which is after two big wins, they
lose.
They lose in embarrassing fashion.
I really want to root for these damn Texans, too. They make it so hard.
I kind of want to root for the Titans.
Next week.
Yeah, they play twice in the next three weeks,
right? That is the opportunity for the Texans, right? Like, that the Titans could play spoiler here. Last week I was asked about it, and I was like, there's no way Houston's definitely going to beat the Broncos. Come on. And then they dropped this game, and so now I don't know if the Titans are standing in their way.
So here's the problem. Like, we just, like, so we had this conversation last week. Like, do the Titans matter? Probably not. Like, in the story of the 2019 season, we will not, like, when we look back on it in 20 years, we might be like, hey, that was that year Ryan Tannehill did that stuff. Like, remember when he almost averaged 10 yards per attempt and was outrageously efficient? Super cool. But we probably will not talk about the Tennessee Titans as a team, because they just most likely won't end up mattering. Now, Houston has the ceiling to matter. Like, they have beat the Chiefs this year. They have beat the Patriots this year. They got shellacked by the Ravens, sure, but like, they've shown
us.
But who doesn't do that? They have shown the ceiling to like matter within this story of the 2019 season. But overall, like, injuries keep hitting them. Will Fuller's out in this game. Not that accounts for the just complete egg that they laid, but they're so flawed on defense that I have a tough time not seeing, like, when next week when we get Ryan Tannehill, like, he'll be a stream once again. AJ Brown, I think, will be a start. Derrick Henry will be an RB1 candidate, even if he did get a little banged up this week. It sure didn't look like it mattered all that much at the end of the game.
I think you're right. I think having Will, you talk about ceiling. I think having Will Fuller in the lineup makes this whole team much more explosive, and they are really missing him. I do think, though, I don't know what's going to see. You're going to root for the Titans. I'm going to root for the Texans, but I think you're still starting. If Will Fuller is playing, you're starting him.
Yep.
In the same fashion you have. You're starting DeAndre Hopkins. You're starting Carlos Hyde, even if the Titans are pretty good against the run. And you're definitely starting Derrick Henry banged up because, as we've said over the past few weeks, after J.J. Watt was injured. Now, J.J. Watt could come back for the postseason. Is that correct?
Yes. Almost certainly not 100%, but he could come back for sure.
Right. So
that does make a difference.
That's going to be a huge difference because since his injury, the run defense has fallen apart tremendously.
Yeah.
So, let's go on.
Let's move on and hit just a few injuries before we get out of here. We talked about Mike Evans and the hamstring. Bruce Arians said he'll be shocked if he makes it back before next week. We kind of said that we think Perryman and OJ Howard would be a little bit sneaky. Also worth noting that Winston did have to miss some time in this game. You know, after a bunch of interceptions, it was like, oh man, did Winston just get benched? No, he actually had a little bit of a thumb injury himself, but he came back and played reasonably well and won the game. Noah Fant, we also mentioned he had a foot injury. X-rays were negative, but look, we kind of hope that Noah Fant is out there next week because he's emerged as one of the few, like, maybe, I don't know if reliable is the right word, but certainly a tight end with a pretty good ceiling.
Well, Hyerman is the one who found the end zone.
Yeah, Fant found the end zone too, but the old Hyerman, he popped back up.
Hyerman.
I like to say Hyerman. He plays the Chiefs next week, who do get creamed by the tight end. It doesn't count.
So if Fant is out, though, you need a cheap DFS stream. It's going to be $10.
Yeah, he's going to be the Ian Thomas.
Right.
I like it. All right, fine. Hyerman's back in our lives, baby.
Only if Fant is out, but I think he's going to play.
Speaking of tight end injuries, Jared Cook. Oh, my God. I'm like tired.
I benched him in my dynasty league, too.
I'm so tired of talking about Jared Cook because it's just eating me inside that he scored 20 points in 2 seconds, then gets a concussion. We'll see what happens with him, but he's another guy that was emerging as like a reliable tight end to start. This landscape just continues to get messy.
I think that's fair. I think Darius Geis is another player we should probably talk about.
Yeah, let's hit Darius Geis. MCL sprain. Yep. It could get complicated because he's done some damage in that knee before, obviously. Washington next week, they have the Eagles, which are obviously...
So they're going to shut him down, right? Like, can we just not... I don't really want to feel any questions about, like, is he going to play? Like, why wouldn't you shut a player who's had chronic knee injury since he entered the NFL and sprained his MCL down for the last 3 weeks of the season?
You would think so, too, because, like, if you really looked hard, you know, and you were really an optimistic human being, you could say, like, last week against the Panthers in that surprise win, Darius Geis looked great. Dwayne Haskins had a couple of throws, and he has a few throws every week where it's like, oh man,
throw to Terry McLaurin this week.
And one to Terry McLaurin this week. Well, we know McLaurin is good, but like, and hey, even Calvin Harmon, he had one catch today, but has started to play a little bit more in the absence of Paul Richardson.
I'm sorry, every time he's on the field, I fall asleep.
Fair enough, but he's started to look like a decently reliable possession receiver. It's like, okay, there's a small young nucleus forming here. But I agree with you. It's like, we've seen some optimism. We don't need to see any more.
Also, next week, Washington will be hosting the Eagles.
Yeah, big time.
And I am not going to mess with Adrian Peterson against the Eagles. I mean, he had a nice spin move, found the end zone. That's great. If you used him in week 14 by chance, or maybe you threw a dart at him in DFS, wonderful. I doubt anyone was really playing on him. He's 39% owned. I don't think I'm going to pick him up because at this point, I'm only using pickups for week-to-week advancement and versus Philadelphia. No, thank you.
Let me tell you
what, I know who he gets in week 16. He's got the Giants.
He's got the Giants. I just wanted to let you know that you doubt anyone was playing him. You're looking at one person who played him this week in the Yahoo Fantasy Football Listener League because I was desperate.
Well, it worked out for you.
It did work out. It was better than playing Josh Gordon because that's the type of situation we were looking at. I do think that Adrian Peterson's worth hanging on to because of that matchup in week 16 against the Giants.
But if you don't have him, do not try to pick him up. This is not a situation where you're trying to pick someone up.
No, I think if you don't need him
I'd
right
pick
now.
Pick up DeAndre Washington over Adrian Peterson if Josh Jacobs is continuing to miss time.
I agree with you. And let's talk about that situation. I think that could be the last thing we hit on before we get out of here, unless you have a bundle of other points to make.
I mean, we'll see what happens.
But Josh Jacobs obviously misses this game against the Tennessee Titans. The Raiders, by the way. It was cute when we thought the Raiders were a potential playoff team. Maybe they could make some noise in the AFC West. They've been getting cracked of late. We're embarrassed by the Titans today. But DeAndre Washington was kind of a bright spot. 14 carries for 53 yards and a touchdown. But I think the important thing, and you noted this, I think, either during FFL or one of the halftime shows, that DeAndre Washington isn't like Josh Jacobs, where for whatever reason, Josh Jacobs is a total zero in the passing game. DeAndre Washington, 6 for 53 through the air. That is going to be crucial if the Raiders are going to continue to get smacked.
I like his involvement in the passing game. He's owned in under 10% of leagues. I'm sorry to report, Matt, that Tyler Higbee has not found the end zone yet.
Yep.
For you, but we will see what happens. And while we wait for that, I will let you know that we will also be back on Friday. Oh, wait. Why don't you do the outro?
We will be back on Friday with a freshly minted,
excellent work,
lovely voice of Liz Loza. She'll be, I can already report, I'm confident, my sources are confident, she's going to be back at 100% for our Friday show. It's going to be beautiful. I'll be back as well. Who knows what type of shape I'm going to be in at that point? God only knows. I'm in your hands, fate. Jeez, what a blunder there, Brett. You'll be back. Raghu, we'll see about you. And subscribe down. What do you normally say?
You can
say
follow us
show?
On Twitter at Yahoo Fantasy. I'm at Liz Loza _FF. That's Matt Harmon _BYB. And
we out.